A quick heads up, this episode includes mention of substance and domestic abuse.
There's also some adult language. Please be advised.
It's September 1981 in Los Angeles, California. 6-year-old Drew is wearing a gray jumpsuit, and her blonde hair is tucked up under a baseball cap. She's in a closet full of stuffed animals. But tucked amongst them, something is alive. It's a long-necked, big-eyed alien. Drew is on the set of E.T. the Extraterrestrial. The crew is seconds away from shooting, but there's something bugging Drew. She thinks her character, Gertie, should have a different reaction to one of her lines. She looks over at the director, Steven Spielberg. He's deep in conversation with a cameraman, and 5 other people are waiting in line to talk to him next. Steven's always busy, so Drew's not sure if now is the best time to share her thoughts. Plus, she's learned that voicing her opinions doesn't work. Drew used to beg her mom to skip work and hang out with her, but Jade never took a single day off.
You know my motto, don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, it's my least favorite of your mottos. Drew looks over at her co-star, E.T., when suddenly a hand touches her shoulder. Drew spins around and sees Spielberg. He kneels down to her level and asks how she's feeling about the scene. Drew enthusiastically says, "Good, I'm ready." "Are you sure?" "I want you to be honest with me. Don't be afraid to tell me what you're thinking." Drew's eyes dart around. Is this some kind of joke? She's heard Spielberg likes to play pranks, but he gives her a trusting smile and says, "I mean it." So Drew tells him how she wants to play the scene. To her surprise, Spielberg says, "Go for it. Do what comes naturally." Then he walks back to his director's chair and calls action.
"But look, you can't tell. Not even Mom."
"Why not?"
"Because grown-ups can't see him. Only little kids can see him."
"Give me a break, Liz."
Drew ad-libs the line, "Give me a break." She adds an eye roll to sell that she's not buying her brother's childish lie. She knows that grown-ups and kids see the same things, and nobody her age would fall for something so incredibly silly. When he yells cut, Spielberg looks straight at Drew and gives her a big thumbs up. He loves what she brought to the scene. Spielberg's praise makes her feel like $1 million. He gave her permission to improvise and be creative. Most importantly, he stopped what he was doing to pay attention to her. She's finally being seen. Drew soaks up the love and attention. Being on set is like being a part of a family. And Steven is playing the role of the perfect dad. She loves making this movie, and she never wants it to end. Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay, well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh yeah, the Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes. When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss.
Yeah.
And so mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. Brooke, I gotta tell you about this new morning routine I have, and it's changing my life. What I'm doing differently, so I wake up in the morning, 9, 10, maybe 11 a.m., eat my normal Reese's breakfast, and then I build some skyscrapers, steal piles of cash from my friends in a bank heist, and then count my billions. It's really a great way to start a day.
Sounds like a case for the FBI, honestly. No, just to be clear, we are talking about the hit mobile game Monopoly Go.
Yes, we are. So there's a reason this game has over 150 million downloads. It's a blast. You can play like a big shot on hundreds of Monopoly boards from Tokyo to Atlantis.
With Monopoly Go, you can send your friends into bankruptcy with rent or by smashing their buildings, which sounds fun.
Yeah.
Download Monopoly Go now free on the App Store and Google Play. From Wondery, I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And this is Even the Rich. In our last episode, the Barrymores cemented their reputation as the royal family of the American stage. But their talent was equally matched by their troubles. Now, little Drew Barrymore is on a mission to follow in her family's footsteps and fill the void left by her abusive and neglectful parents. She's going to use her acting talent to find love wherever she can. But as she'll quickly learn, seeking validation can be more trouble than it's worth. This is episode 2, Wishful Thinking. In September of 1981, 6-year-old Drew is filming E.T. the Extraterrestrial. And the job turns out to be the best thing that ever happened to her. Before E.T., Drew had been lonely. With her mom constantly working, she spends most of her time with a revolving door of babysitters. Every day, she would sit under an avocado tree in her backyard and stuff herself until she was full.
I mean, at 6, my drug of choice was M&Ms, but go off, Drew.
I mean, you got to get those healthy fats in. But for Drew, eating avocados was a way to fill up the emptiness inside of her. But now, Drew has no time to be lonely. She's always loved film sets because they're full of adults that pay lots of attention to her. The cast and crew are like one big family. And for the first time, Drew has friends her own age. The stars in this film are all kids. She's the youngest, but they don't treat her like a baby. They include her in everything. They study together, eat together, and play together. She's even friends with E.T. Drew eats lunch with the animatronic puppet almost every day and has full conversations with him. To her, E.T. is alive. When Spielberg notices, he makes sure that two puppeteers are always working E.T. when Drew is nearby so that she can talk with her friend whenever she wants to.
And the puppeteers are like, I guess we'll just shit ourselves since we can't even use the bathroom now.
Yep, depends are dependable. But as much as he looks out for Drew like the father she's never had, Spielberg also joins in on all of the fun. He's a total goofball, and he loves hanging out with the kids. On Halloween, all the children dress up in costumes, but none of their costumes compare to Spielberg's. He shows up in full-on old lady drag. We're talking Mrs. Doubtfire level, complete with long, dangly earrings and a red velvet hat. Drew laughs so hard she cries. Spielberg also plays basketball and video games with them. He even starts food fights and flings potatoes across the table with his fork.
Yeah, he did the same thing on the set of Schindler's List.
Yeah, I'm sure that set was an absolute laugh riot.
Mm-hmm.
Spielberg plays with them, but he also treats them with respect. He's the fearless leader of this grand adventure, and Drew adores him. She'd follow him anywhere. It's 1981. Drew is standing in the living room set, ready to shoot her next scene. She's wearing a light pink satin shirt and a pink plaid skirt. The final touches on her costume are knee-high socks with bright red Mary Jane shoes. Her hair is pulled back on the side with a little white clip. She looks like a little princess, but she feels like a monster. Drew feels dizzy and clammy, and her throat is throbbing. Drew doesn't want anyone to know she's sick, especially Spielberg. She doesn't want to be a problem. If anyone finds out, she might be sent home, and that could shut down production. Drew's determined to push through the pain. She wants to please her favorite person in the world, Spielberg. She needs to make sure that at the end of the day, he still loves her. When Spielberg yells action, Drew tries to focus. In this scene, she's supposed to be practicing her reading skills. She sits in front of a television set and recites the words as they flash across a screen. They're simple words like basket, bandit, ball, and bananas. Drew's a good reader for her age, but because she's sick, she mixes up the order of the words. Spielberg yells cut and tells her to start over. So Drew takes it from the top, but she messes up again and again and again. She can't get it straight. Spielberg yells, stop fooling around. He's frustrated and doesn't understand what's going on. Drew's usually so prepared. Tears well up in her eyes and the floodgates open. She squeaks out, I'm sorry, let me try again. Feeling awful for losing control, Spielberg tells the crew to take a 10 and walks away. Moments later, Drew passes out. When they take her temperature, it's 104.
Wow. And I call in sick when I have a hangnail.
Yeah, this coming from the woman with 5 jobs. Drew's sent to the hospital, and the whole way there, she prays she hasn't ruined the movie. She'd never do anything to risk Spielberg's love. When Spielberg realizes Drew's sick, of course he isn't mad at all. He apologizes profusely. He's mortified that he snapped at her and lost his temper. Drew's just relieved that they're still friends. In fact, she even has her mom ask him to be her godfather, and he agrees. As for the movie, of course it survives the days she misses. E.T. the Extraterrestrial opens in June of 1982, and it's a blockbuster right out of the gate. It shoots to number one at the box office and stays there for 6 weeks. 6 months later at Christmas, it hits number one again. Within a year, it surpasses Star Wars as the highest-grossing film of all time. And the reviews are amazing. Roger Ebert gives it 4 out of 4 stars. Every kid, every adult, and grandparent in the country goes to see E.T.
Yeah, I saw it, and I did not like it.
Okay, well, we're not going to move quickly past that. Why did you hate it?
It was just too traumatic for me when they had to separate at the end. Like, that's just...
Oh, wow, spoiler. I'm just kidding.
This whole arc is a spoiler. My God.
I know. Well, E.T. makes a lasting impression on everyone who sees it, good or bad, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And the world falls in love with its youngest star. In fact, the movie is so successful that the studio sends the cast on an international promotional tour. In England, Drew meets Princess Diana and presents her with an E.T. doll,
which she proceeds to toss down the stairs after her stepmother.
Exactly. Overnight, Drew becomes massively famous. With her blonde pigtails and infectious giggle, she's America's favorite pint-sized star. She can't go anywhere without being recognized. She even gets stopped for autographs crossing the street. Drew can't believe how much love and attention she's getting. It's overwhelming, but it's also invigorating. Her plan worked better than she could have ever dreamed. The world greets her with open arms, and she feels like she'll never be lonely again.
She is just 7 years old. Would you welcome, please, Drew Barrymore.
It's 1982 in Burbank, California. Drew's at NBC Studios as a guest on The Tonight Show. She emerges from the wings wearing a pink satin dress. Her hair is up in a high ponytail tied with a pink bow. She beams at the audience and takes a seat next to the legendary Johnny Carson, who's sitting at his desk. Drew is a veteran at publicity by now, so she knows just how to charm the crowd and Johnny.
It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. I've been waiting all my life to meet you, and I found you.
Of your whole life.
That thunderous applause is exactly what she's looking for. Drew feeds off the energy. She's also wearing a retainer with fake front teeth that she uses for on-screen appearances. Drew's lost half her baby teeth, and this fills in the gaps. But halfway through her interview, she pulls it out and plops it right on Johnny's desk and smiles wide. The audience and Johnny go wild.
So it's cute when Drew does it, but when I put my mouth guard on the table, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, but hers doesn't make her snore really loud either.
All right. At least I don't have ground teeth anymore.
That's true. As far as Drew is concerned, it can't get any better than this. She basks in the attention, telling jokes, pulling faces, and teasing Johnny Carson. She sends a hello to Steven Spielberg and tells him that she loves him. She even sings "You Have the Cutest Little Baby Face" to Johnny Carson. It's equal parts canny performance and an unabashed appeal for love. But the more love she gets from her fans, the more she's reminded that there's still one person in her life that she can't seem to win over, no matter how hard she tries. Since E.T.'s release, Drew hasn't heard anything from her father, John. Their relationship is strained, and John hasn't been present in Drew's life. She hasn't even seen him in 2 years, and her mom, Jade, prefers it that way. One of the last times John saw Drew was before shooting E.T., and things went horribly wrong. After a babysitter canceled at the last second, Jade was so desperate to find someone to watch Drew that she called John. While he was babysitting, he thought it would be fun to teach his 4-year-old daughter some karate. He started with kicks, like real full-out kicks. He kicked Drew in the arm, the stomach, and even the head.
Okay, as a Red Cross certified babysitter, I can assure you that is not how one babysits.
Sounds more like a brag than concern, but okay. And it gets worse. When Drew told him he was hurting her, he grabbed her hand and held it to a candle flame and tells her not to be afraid and says that pain is just in the mind.
Okay, fuck this guy. The avocado tree was a better babysitter.
Seriously. But Drew was so young that she barely remembers any of it. The little she knows about her dad, she's heard secondhand from her mom. Jade tried to protect Drew from the worst details about her father, but the mystery just made his absence loom larger. And because he's her dad, she still wants his approval. She wants to know what her dad thinks about her performance in E.T. and her newfound fame. She wants to know if she made him proud. It's 1982 in Los Angeles, and Drew is wearing her favorite new dress. She's baked a big batch of cookies and gone all out in honor of a visit from her father. After 2 years of silence, John finally decided he'd like to see his daughter. Jade knows how much Drew wants to see her dad, so she caves and tells John he can stop by. Drew knows that every experience with her father has been negative. He's been scary and violent, but he's her dad and she still wants him to love her. She dreams of living together with both of her parents like a real family. She wants to feel the way she did on the set of E.T. And secretly, she hopes that deep down, her dad wants the same thing. She thinks maybe now with all of her success, things will be different. When Jade lets John in, he's a little wobbly because he's a lot drunk. But before Jade can tell him to leave, he walks right past her and towards Drew. "How's the so-called movie star?" he says.
Wow, trash-talking a 7-year-old? He must be so proud.
Yeah, and shockingly, it gets worse. John tells Drew he hasn't seen E.T. yet. Her eyes go wide. She's stunned. Everyone in the world has seen the movie, but her own father couldn't make the time?
Yeah, I mean, being a deadbeat is obviously very time-consuming.
I mean, look, he could be jealous. She's obviously had more acting success in 7 short years than he's had in his whole life. John asks her for an autograph, but then he adds, "How about you put it on a check?" Asking for money is the last straw. Drew now sees with her own eyes exactly who her father is. Her mom was right. He sucks. And Drew explodes. "You're an asshole," she screams at him. John is shocked. And Drew doesn't stop. She tells her dad she's sick of all the drinking and drugs. She wants him out of her life for good. Drew kicks a chair and storms out of the room. Her dream of having her dad in her life dies right then and there. She's moving on. But it's okay, because she still has her mom. And Jade is finally ready to make her a priority. With Drew's rising fame and income, Jade decides to quit her job as a waitress and become Drew's full-time manager.
Jade walked so Kris Jenner could run.
Yeah, and she's doing amazing, sweetie. Drew's the breadwinner now. With her paycheck, they buy a house in the San Fernando Valley near all the studios. Drew's gonna need a little help navigating Hollywood and making strategic career choices. And after several decades in Hollywood, Jade has the know-how to guide her.
Two starlets against the world. Nothing could possibly go wrong.
Just like me and you.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there are definitely pros and cons, but right now, Drew only sees the pros. She's finally Jade's top priority. It's exactly what Drew has always wanted. This is why she got into acting in the first place. Now, she and her mom are together day and night. Jade is even Drew's date to the Oscars and the Golden Globes. And when they're not wearing gowns, they're on the couch together reading scripts. It's a more grown-up relationship than most kids have with their mom. But hey, they're making it work. And now they're looking for a role that speaks to Drew. After months of duds, one script finally jumps out at them. Drew knows this is the movie she's meant to make. It has so much in common with her own story. It'll be like playing a real-life version of herself. She relates to the character in ways she can't explain. But once production begins, she'll find that the story hits a little too close to home. So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listed on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen, and you know I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah, new members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500 to get started.
Life is busier than ever. It might be harder to find time these days to grocery shop, prep, and cook healthy and hearty meals. I get it. But Factor's got you covered.
Yeah, so Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, delivered right to your door, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Exactly. And Factor is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. If you're traveling or still finishing up last week's meals, you can always pause or reschedule deliveries.
I mean, I know I've talked before about how much I love Factor because it's just so easy.
And it doesn't taste like, you know, the microwavable yes. meals you see, especially in rom-coms when we're trying to heighten and highlight how sad and pathetic this woman's life is.
Yeah.
They don't taste like that. They taste so good as if you made them yourself or hired a chef. Head to factormeals.com/rich50 and use code rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code rich50 at factormeals.com/rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
In 1983, Drew starts production on a movie called Irreconcilable Differences. She's starring alongside Ryan O'Neal and Shelley Long. The story is about a little girl who's a pawn in her parents' bitter divorce. She's sick of feeling used and neglected, so she serves them with her own divorce papers.
Okay, so her audition prep was just existing.
Yeah, exactly. And Drew knows exactly how it feels to watch your parents fight and want to cut them out of your life. She could give the director some great notes. But when filming starts, Drew learns very quickly that her thoughts aren't appreciated like they were on E.T. This set is the opposite of that one. It's miserable, and there are no other kids her age. None of the actors hang out, and there's definitely no goofing around. The director is so stressed that he barely acknowledges Drew. She feels completely invisible. In one scene, he keeps Drew working for 40 takes, and it drains her emotionally. When she's finally done, she bursts into tears and runs to her trailer. The director doesn't even notice. He's basically the anti-Spielberg. The environment on set takes a toll on Drew. She wants to quit, but she's getting paid 6 times what she made on E.T. She knows she has to stick it out. Drew's feeling all the adult stress of providing for her family. She starts to wonder if Jade really loves her or just the money she's bringing in. When the shoot wraps, Drew couldn't be happier. The movie is a disappointment at the box office, but for Drew, it's a success. She gets rave reviews for her acting and earns a Golden Globe nomination for Best Supporting Actress. Even though it was a miserable experience, Drew's hopeful her next film will be better. She needs to reignite her love for acting and for the movie business. She's far too young to be jaded. Drew starts work on a film called Firestarter, based on a Stephen King novel. It's about a little girl with pyrokinetic abilities, meaning she can control heat and fire.
What I could do with those powers.
Yeah, it'd be 60 degrees year-round in LA. And it's exactly why Drew fell in love with the role. She gets to be in control and light shit on fire. And life on Firestarter is better than her last film. She really likes her co-star, George C. Scott. He plays the evil government agent who's trying to capture her. He's very tall and wears an eye patch for most of the movie, but he's the nicest guy. She loves to jump on his back.
Okay, as a 30-something-year-old, I can say backs are not made for jumping onto.
Well, as a 30-something-year-old, backs aren't made for much, I've learned. And sadly, Firestarter burns out at the box office. The reviews are scathing. Rolling Stone calls it a four-alarm disaster. Stephen King hates it. He says it's one of the worst adaptations of his work. Drew tries her luck again with another Stephen King film called Cat's Eye, but that one does even worse. Between the bad reviews and financial losses, Drew feels crappy. She's the star, the one on the posters with her name in lights. She knows people had very high expectations for her to turn profits and garner awards. It's a lot to put on the shoulders of a kid her age. But as the saying goes, you're only as good as your last performance.
Yeah, that's why I gave up acting after playing in Oompa Loompa.
Yeah, you really peaked. But Hollywood doesn't work like that. It's cutthroat. In fact, studio executives decide that 9-year-old Drew is over. She's too old for the cute, precocious child parts she's used to playing, and she's way too young to be cast in teen roles. Drew's entering those awkward prepubescent years. Suddenly, she's unhireable. The scripts that were piling up at her door stop coming in. She's not the rising star she used to be. Poor Drew is terrified. If Hollywood thinks she's washed up, she'll have to go back to being the lonely girl with an avocado tree for a best friend, and she does not want that. The whole point of becoming an actor was to escape that loneliness. Drew feels like everything is slipping through her fingers, and there's nothing she can do to stop it. It's 1985, and Drew's sitting at the kitchen table with her mom. They've ordered Chinese food because Jade's had a busy day trying to revive Drew's dwindling career. She's been on the phone nonstop trying to get her an acting gig. Just as Drew takes a bite of chow mein, Jade tells her she talked to a new casting director. Drew's like, can't this conversation wait till after dinner? She's so sick of everything being about work. It's all Jade ever wants to talk about. And it's driving Drew nuts. She's starting to regret having her mom be her manager.
She, Chloe, Courtney, and Kim should start a support group.
Oh, God, I know. Mixing business with family usually isn't a good idea. Drew says she just wants to have one normal dinner where they can talk about things like shopping or school. Jade tells her there'll be plenty of time for that. But right now, they need to talk about how to fix Drew's career. Annoyed, Drew drops her fork and says, fine, what did the casting director say? Jade tells her the casting director thinks Drew might have better luck in television. They're always looking for guest stars. Drew is mortified.
Okay, that seems extreme. It's not like she's pitching her to be an extra.
I mean, in the 80s, TV was limited. It was mostly network, like NBC, ABC, and CBS. TV actors weren't considered A-list talent like film actors.
Okay, so TV actors are peasants and movie actors are royalty. Got it.
Yeah, and podcasters are like fucking cockroaches.
Scum of the earth.
Yeah, and to add insult to injury, Drew wouldn't even be a series regular. It feels like a double demotion. Drew picks up her fork. She wants to stab her mom for suggesting television, but stabs her egg roll instead. Jade can see the conversation isn't going well, but she reminds Drew that it's been almost a year since she's worked. And with that, Drew loses her appetite completely. She didn't need that reminder, but she feels like she has no other options. So she's like, fine, I guess I'm doing TV now. Between Hollywood's rejection and her mother's disinterest in her life, Drew's self-esteem is tanking. She can't imagine how things could get any worse. It's fall 1985, and 10-year-old Drew is walking towards her homeroom. She's got her backpack on and her head held high. She's hoping today will be better than yesterday, and the day before that. She's only been at this school for a month, but it feels like an eternity. When Drew started, she knew that the kids might need a second to warm up to her. It's gotta be weird for them to meet a celebrity. But she didn't expect them to be mean to her. One boy threw a book at her head. He and his friends are making Drew's life a living hell. They've also given her nicknames like Drew the Pooh and told her her nose looks like Porky Pig's. Drew's no longer the same cherub in pigtails from her ET days. She's getting older and filling out as preteens do. But these boys are ruthless, and they tease her about her weight.
Okay, fuck these boys. They're just juvenile windsocks.
Windsocks?
Yeah, it's an insult from Frasier.
Oh, God. Well, Drew's either being terrorized or ignored completely. She waffles between feeling like a freak and feeling totally invisible. Turns out, being famous is actually a bad thing when you're a fourth grader. To them, Drew's weird and different. She misses class for auditions and talks like a grown-up because she spent so much time on sets with adults. But her classmates' parents are happy to stop and talk to her. They ask her what it was like to work with Spielberg and about the dress she wore to the Oscars. But Drew wants to hang out with people her own age. She wants to have sleepovers and talk about boys. She wants to do the things kids do. She's determined to show her classmates that she's just like them. When she notices the surfer shorts they all wear, she buys a pair of her own. They have rocket ships and planets on them. She can't wait to wear them to school. The next day, Drew enters her classroom and looks around. She tries to be nonchalant, but she's wondering if anyone's noticed her new shorts yet. The boy who threw a book at her head does. He points and yells, "Cosmic cow."
Okay, so does this guy grow up to be Ted Bundy or what?
I mean, he must. Drew runs away in tears. She's tried so hard to fit in with these kids, but nothing works. All she can think about is how much they hate her and how much she hates this place. Drew feels utterly lost. Hollywood doesn't want her, the kids in school bully her, and her mom is only concerned about her career. The only thing she still has is her fame. Because she's famous, she still gets invited to parties. Even though roles have dried up, she's still on the guest list at the clubs.
Okay, I don't really want to be dancing to Hot in Here with a 10-year-old on the guest list.
Fair point. But Drew and her mom RSVP yes to Hollywood parties, even though most of them are held at nightclubs. Jade sees them as an opportunity to network. She takes Drew because it's a good way to get exposure. Being seen means people may think of her when they're casting their next TV show or movie. And besides, going to parties and clubs is fun. Jade's been cooped up at home with Drew for years. Her little girl is her ticket to the high life.
Also, bullshit that she gets in because College Park bouncers wouldn't let me in when I was 18, and these jabronis are letting in a 10-year-old. Like, come on.
Yeah, I'm so sorry you had to go through that.
Yeah.
But because of her fame, Drew waltzes right past the velvet ropes. And inside the clubs, she realizes how much better it is to be dancing with Diana Ross and Richard Gere at Studio 54 than studying fractions.
Okay, but is anyone picking fractions in this scenario?
Lindsay Lohan and Mean Girls. But it is more than that. Drew's more comfortable there than at home or at school. She's welcomed into red leather booths where she sits and chats with Jack Nicholson, Madonna, and Cher. She listens as they complain about their agents and talk about the trends in the movie business. But Drew's not blind. She's very aware of the age gap. She wants her new friends to see her as one of them. She knows they think of her as a prop. But when she's with other celebrities, she feels like an insider, like she belongs. So she starts to think about how she can make them see her as their equal. It's 1985. 10-year-old Drew is in a smoke-filled room wearing a long white t-shirt she's belted into a dress. She's paired that with cherry red leggings and pink sneakers. Chunky bracelets rattle on her wrists, and her hair is curled into waves and pulled back with a big red clip. Drew thinks her club look is perfect for dancing with Emilio Estevez and Demi Moore. They're all here for Rob Lowe's 20th birthday party. Drew's dancing and having fun, but she feels like her friends are having even more fun than she is. They're moving more freely to the music. They're laughing a lot more than she is. They're slurring their words.
Okay, well, booze will do that to you.
It will. But Drew thinks it's cool, and she wants to be included. Right now, she feels like a kid who's hanging out with her older siblings, and that's not what she's looking for. She wants to be one of them. Drew eyes the bar and spots 10 or so open beer bottles. Will anyone really notice if one goes missing? She could easily snag one. And she does. But as soon as the cold glass is in her hand, she feels guilty. She makes a beeline to a bathroom stall to hide. Drew stares long and hard at the brown bottle. She knows someone her age shouldn't be drinking, but she's desperate to join her friend's secret club. She can't wait until she's 21. That's 11 years from now. She lifts the beer to her mouth. The cool, bubbly liquid hits her lips. She immediately spits it out. It's not great. She doesn't get why everyone loves it. But she's determined to find out. So she lifts the bottle back to her lips and drinks. It's not long before the alcohol hits her. As she gets woozy, Drew realizes exactly why everyone drinks. She likes this warm, fuzzy feeling. It lights her up and makes her feel more confident. It's kind of like this bottle made her magically grow up.
Well, there's some kind of Alice in Wonderland metaphor there.
Definitely. A buzz Drew returns to the dance floor and parties harder than she ever has. She laughs and moves her body in ways she didn't know she could. Rob Lowe's 12-year-old stepbrother notices. As Drew's exiting the club, he reaches for her and plants a kiss right on her lips. Drew is in heaven. She's closed the gap between herself and her grown-up friends. She drank like an adult and made out like one too. She's ready to say sayonara to her childhood because she's done with it.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10 to get your Magnesium Breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10.
When you find new ways to save, you can reach your financial goals more easily and still have the occasional treat.
Exactly. And Chime's here to help you do that. With a Chime checking account, you can make financial progress with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe or getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit.
Yep. So if you set up direct deposit into your Chime account and use an activated debit card, Chime will spot you up to your limit when you exceed your balance.
And I love that Chime never charges fees or interest for using SpotMe. To date, Chime has spotted members over $20 billion.
My God. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/rich. That's chime.com/rich.
Chime feels like progress.
Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details. As far as Drew is concerned, drinking gave her the best night of her life. Everything went her way after that beer. So she becomes an expert at hiding her new hobby. At parties, she steals sips off half-empty glasses that are just lying around.
I mean, I want to judge, but I did the same thing when I was in college and very poor.
Well, yeah, how else are you going to get up the courage to make out with your mirror?
Exactly.
At clubs, Drew waits for the bartender to walk away, then creeps behind the bar and pours herself shots of vodka.
So this was the Passover rave we bartended in North Hollywood then.
Yeah, 100%. Somehow, no one notices. At least that's what Drew says in her memoir. She claims that she'd just chew a lot of gum and nobody would be the wiser. Her mother claims she didn't have a clue. Plus, Drew is an actor. I mean, if anyone's gonna be good at making up cover stories and pretending to be fine, it's gonna be her. It's 1985, and Drew's sitting shotgun in her mom's friend's car. Jade's friend is smoking weed as she cruises through the streets of LA. She turns to Drew, holds out the pipe, and says, "Interested?" This isn't the first time Drew's seen adults get stoned around her. She knows how it affects them. They seem to forget everything. They act loopy, like they don't have a care in the world. And that sounds pretty nice to Drew. So she says yes.
If only she had been through the DARE program, she'd have 8 ways to say no.
Exactly. Drew takes a huge puff and coughs hard. Her mom's friend tells her to inhale a little less next time and hold it in. Drew takes another puff and lets it out slowly. She sits back, letting the weed do its job. She's never felt a high like this before. Everything starts to feel blurry. She can barely remember her mom's friend's name. But she doesn't mind forgetting. In fact, she loves it. With weed, she can block out all kinds of things, like the bullying at school and the constant rejection from the film industry. Drew has finally found something that brings her peace. And peace is something she could really use right now. Because when she's not high, she's at war with her mother. The only way for Drew to continue drinking and smoking weed is to lie to her mom. But she hates lying. It makes her feel guilty. And the guilt makes her feel resentful. And she channels her resentment into her relationship with Jade. Drew thinks the reason she smokes weed is because of her mom. Jade is the only parent around to blame for their family problems. Drew can't stand that Jade only seems to care about Drew's career and not her happiness. This vicious cycle of guilt and resentment leads to more and more fights with Jade. And the arguing only gets worse when Drew graduates from grade school to middle school.
To be fair, middle school is one of the 7 circles of hell.
Oh, 1,000%. Now, Drew's 11 and entering 6th grade. But she makes friends with juniors and seniors. She's got a lot more in common with 16 and 17-year-olds than kids her own age. And when she doesn't, she just doubles down by acting more jaded than she is. Drew's ecstatic to finally have some friends at school. She's determined to keep them, even if it means putting on a performance. After all, she's been doing that her whole life. Goodbye to the cutesy, giggling Drew, and hello to cool, world-weary Drew. With older teenage friends, Drew's drinking and drug use escalates. She hangs out at their houses and raids their parents' liquor cabinets. And since these kids can drive, they go to drive-in theaters and get stoned. But soon, the negative side effects of all that alcohol and weed start to show. Drew feels terrible all the time. She's moody and irritated. Her fights with her mom get worse. They can barely even be in a room together without it turning into a screaming match.
This kind of just sounds like what TV writers think teenage parent relationships are like.
It really does. According to Drew's memoir, Jade thinks Drew's rage is just teenage melodrama. But it's only a matter of time before Jade realizes that this isn't some adolescent angst stage. Something is seriously wrong with her child. It's January 1987 in New York City. At 7 a.m., Jade is sitting on a couch, staring at the door, willing it to open. 12-year-old Drew went out last night, and she still hasn't come home. Her curfew was 1 a.m.
I've been out of my parents' house for years, and my curfew still isn't that late.
Same. Jade breathes a sigh of relief as Drew finally walks through the door. But then she sees the state her daughter is in. Her shirt is stained pink from some fruity cocktail. Her hair is wet and matted. She's a total mess, and she can barely stand up straight. When Jade moves closer, she recoils from the smell. It's a mix of alcohol and puke. Drew manages to get out the words, "Hi, Mom," and then keels over. Furious, Jade drags her daughter to bed and places a garbage can next to her head. As she looks at her sleeping daughter, Jade knows things can't continue the way they are. She's going to have to start actually parenting her daughter. When Drew finally wakes up, Jade tells her she's grounded for 2 weeks. And she makes it clear that there are going to be new rules. She gives her a curfew of midnight and tells her that if she sleeps over at a friend's house, she needs to call every couple of hours to check in. But Drew just rolls her eyes as she hurls again. Jade's new rules are too little too late. Drew's been free to do as she pleases for years. Having her mother suddenly breathing down her neck just makes her want to act out more. Drew starts to disappear for a couple days at a time. And when she eventually gets home, their fights turn violent. Drew throws vases at Jade and tells her to go to hell. Jade has no idea how to reel her back in. After another huge screaming match, Jade throws a $100 bill at Drew and tells her to get the fuck out.
Okay, so now they're both channeling her deadbeat dad.
Exactly. Everything is spiraling out of control. 12-year-old Drew is in the bathroom. She's wearing a knee-length, hot pink satin cocktail dress with lace on the bodice and puffy sleeves. Her arm is stacked with black bracelets. She's going for 80s Madonna. Her friend is holding her crimped hair back. But Drew is not about to throw up. She's about to do cocaine. Drew's at the junior-senior prom with her friends. And tonight, they made a pact to get really fucked up.
Okay, that's weird, because we make that same pact every weekend.
Yeah, we really do, just without the cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
All of the fighting with her mom is getting to her. The alcohol and weed aren't helping like they used to. Drew's desperate for something stronger to help her deal with how bad things have gotten at home. Her friends tell her that cocaine is the best way to make all her problems go away. And she's hoping they're right. Drew looks down at the white powder cut into a perfect straight line. Her friend hands her a tightly wound dollar bill. But as she brings the bill to her nose, she hesitates. She's having second thoughts. She knows cocaine is a lot more serious than weed or booze. She's seen what drugs have done to her father. "I changed my mind," Drew says. She hands the bill back to her friend and turns to leave. But as she reaches for the door, she remembers her mom yelling, "Get the fuck out," and "You're an ungrateful bitch." It stops Drew dead in her tracks. She turns around, grabs the dollar bill back, leans over, and inhales. As the cocaine hits her bloodstream, she can feel that everything is about to change. Cocaine is a whole new feeling for Drew. It makes her feel invincible. All of her emptiness, rejection, self-loathing, and guilt transform into something else, a feeling of total power. It's a magical drug to Drew, a diet aid, party extender, and mood lifter all in one. When she's high on coke, life is one big party. Without it, everything is dull and painful. So her path is clear. Keep getting high to keep the bad days at bay. Drew's partying is out of control. Her grades are plummeting. She doesn't care about auditions or making movies anymore. Her relationship with Jade has completely disintegrated, and they barely talk to each other. Drew is miserable, but she can't admit that anything is wrong. Because right now, just like her father, grandfather, and great-grandfather before her, alcohol, weed, and cocaine are the only things helping her outrun her demons. And she's nowhere close to being ready to face them. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Even the Rich ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. This is episode 2 of our 4-part series, Drew Barrymore, Rewriting the Story. We use many sources when researching our stories, including Wildflower by Drew Barrymore, Little Girl Lost by Drew Barrymore and Todd Gold, and Happily Ever After by Leah and Alina Furman. A quick note about our scenes. Some scripted dialogue has been added for narrative cohesiveness.
A quick reminder that our brand new Even the Rich merch store is live now. From cropped hoodies and comfy joggers to phone cases and champagne flutes, you can find it all at wonderyshop.com. And be sure to tell your friends.
I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams. Allison Reimer wrote this episode. Editing is by Julia Wolf. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Sound design is by Sam Ada. Our coordinating producer is Matt Gant. And our managing producer is Tanja Thigpen. Kate Young and Rachel Engelman are our series producers. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Marsha Louie for Wondery.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.